the 2019 AXFI conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And in the studio lounge, we have Mr. Travis Drolet from Judy AI. How are you, Travis?
Not doing too bad. How about you?
I'm doing all right. You're smiling for a reason because you're a big winner today. You were one of the winners of the speed round earlier this morning. Congrats.
Yeah, they seemed to like what we had to say.
I think so. You had some pretty good stuff to say. Can you give folks out there a quick summary on who Judy AI, it's actually Judy.AI.
Judy.AI, yeah. Either way.
So, but what do you guys do? And then tell us what you presented for the speed round.
Sure. So we are a loan decisioning engine for consumer and business lending. So we help credit unions essentially make faster and more educated decisions on some of the loan requests that they receive on a daily basis.
Yep.
And how did we win? I don't know.
Or what did you present up there?
What did we present?
That prompted the win.
Yeah, so what we did up there was we just demoed what we do on a daily basis. So what our product is in its core is it's an application that consumers and businesses can fill out, followed by an instant decision that the credit union is able or a bank is able to give them. And then it's an admin interface that internally within the bank or credit union, they can look at and find out why every decision was made and a lot of insight into some of those decisions and what's going into that. So all we did was we went up there and we said, "Hey, this is our product."
You know what
I mean?
Like,
you know, we had 7 minutes to go through the demonstration of our application, and all that, and it takes 5 minutes to go through it. Realistically,
wow.
If you're a consumer or a business, it takes 5 minutes to fill that out and get a decision.
Okay.
So we thought, 7 minutes might as well go into our admin interface as well. And
so what's the background on the name? Because I'm assuming the name means something.
So we used to be Lendified.
Yeah.
Lendified, we had a little bit of confusion with our sister company who's an online lender.
Okay.
So we switched names. We switched to Judy.AI.
Okay.
The reason we switched that is because we kind of thought of it as like a, Alexa almost. Like it gives like the brand or the product a bit of a brand, what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, hey, if we want a loan decision, we want to find out why a loan was, that had this decision or outcome, you just go to Judy.
Okay.
Judy will give you an answer.
Oh, okay.
Also, what we do is we adjudicate on loans.
Oh,
we adjudicate. We don't tell people
I like
that.
I like that now. Okay, yeah. Now I get it. I got it. Light bulb goes on.
There you go.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's connect the dots to credit unions. Let's put it in a practical application for credit unions. How would they use this and how would it benefit them?
Sure. So credit unions or banks, community banks,
financial
institutions, what have you,
right.
They can adopt this platform in 6 to 8 weeks, stand it up, get it up and running.
That's fast.
And then after that, we're able to connect it with their other platforms that they might have in use and that they're using. They get it stood up and immediately after that they can offer it on their website. A consumer or a business can go on there, start filling out applications on their phone and get just really quick decisions. But the credit union doesn't have to change the way they're doing things.
Okay.
Right. So a lot of platforms will come in and they'll say, hey, this is how you're doing things now. We come in and we say, hey, we're going to automate what you're already doing and just make it a much more frictionless experience for the consumer or the business.
And where does the AI part of it come in too?
The AI component. So the artificial intelligence component comes in. We also have machine learning aspects to our platform. So what our platform will do is it will take in bank data, raw bank data, and it'll go into our categorization engine. And in an automated fashion, and this is using the AI component, it'll decide on that loan, it'll categorize it, it'll say, okay, this is operating cash flow, this is financing cash flow, this is revenue, this is expenses. It'll pick all that apart, create a debt service coverage ratio, which is everything that these financial institutions need in order to make a decision.
Right.
That's what the AI component does in an automated fashion. It's able to do that immediately.
Gotcha.
Like I said, we also have machine learning components to this as well. So as the decision is making these decisions, as it brings in applications and as all our credit unions and banks use this platform, the system is actually just learning and getting smarter and smarter and smarter.
Yep.
It's building up a database of why these decisions are being made, able to make smarter and smarter decisions.
Right. And so then obviously the financial institution becomes more valuable.
Exactly.
For the consumer or the member. So because it's making these better decisions for lending and whatnot. So
at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is allow these financial institutions to offer an experience that's omnichannel, like mobile on their smartphone, laptop, etc. That's comparable to the experience that people get in every other walk of their life, right? You go on Amazon, you can order everything on your phone from end to end, you can do it quickly, but in financial institutions, that's not always the case. And they previously just haven't had that sort of technology available. But it is available, it's not hard to stand up, and that's kind of, that's what we go in and do.
Ah, all right, sounds good. Big day for you guys.
Yeah.
So good stuff, congrats on the win.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else to wrap up here? Any other words of wisdom or any products, events, trends, issues that you want to share?
Any other? Well, I would just say, like, this has been an amazing conference. They made it really easy for the presenters to succeed with this.
Mm-hmm.
The way the entire conference has been run is just very organized, and you know, it's a very good vibe. Everybody's very friendly.
And, oh yeah.
And so
very,
you know,
open here.
Happy to be coming to conferences and be invited to conferences like this. I'd say if your boss calls you 12 hours before the presentation happens and says that he's not able to do it, can you do it? Just say yes. Just say yes and figure it out later.
Well done. Good thinking on your feet there. All right,
yeah,
Travis.
You can.
Yeah, well, you did well. You did well up there. So congratulations again, Travis. Thank you very much. Travis Drolet from Judy AI. Well done, sir.
Thanks.
Boom, we're out.
We're out.
Excelente.
Awesome.
We're at the 2019 AXFI conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I'm here with Mr. Roger Grimes from KnowBe4.
Yes.
And before we get into our conversation, can you give us a quick summary on KnowBe4?
So KnowBe4 is the world's largest security awareness training vendor. So we help people. Phishing is responsible for 70-90% of all malicious data breaches, and our company helps train employees so they recognize phishing and what to do, how to put it down. And part of that is we help customers do simulated phishing campaigns against their employees.
Yeah.
So hopefully when they're being phished, the first time isn't from the hacker.
They know. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, because like you said, that's most of the problem is people opening
that
a PDF or something like that.
Yeah, that and unpatched software is probably 90-99% of the risk in most organizations. Just two things.
So whenever I get like an update from Microsoft, should I go, okay, update? So there's patches in there and stuff?
As long as it's legitimate.
Yeah,
right?
As long as it's Microsoft.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Hey, let's talk about, you were presented earlier, and then you're going to present again tomorrow. But today's was 10 ways, how to hack into your email? Or
ways I can hack you using email.
Okay, and phishing is one of those, I would assume.
Yeah, and this is, actually the talk is 10 of the most interesting ways that doesn't involve phishing. Our email attachments or all the normal ways. So it was kind of a neat talk in that.
Right.
I guarantee if you talk to anybody that saw that, an attendee, they're going to say it scared the crap out of me. because it shows you how easy it is in all weird ways. Like, I can send you an email that all you do is open, and I get your Windows password hash that I then crack to your password and break into your environment.
Oh, my.
Or even that I send you an email, and you think you know, if you have a touch screen, it looks like a hair or a piece of dust, and you touch it to clean it, but it's really a link, and it sends me your Windows password.
Oh, my gosh!
So it's really interesting, cool stuff like that. And there's a patch out there to stop that attack, a Microsoft patch.
Yeah.
No one is obliged. It's an optional patch for reasons I don't understand.
It may be a necessary patch. Yeah.
It's been out for over a year.
Yeah.
No company, and I've checked hundreds, has it applied. Most people don't even know it exists. They don't know the attack exists. But again, I can send you an email. All you do is open it and or click on a link, and I get your Windows password hatch.
Wow. Well, here's kind of an obvious question. Why isn't Microsoft making this more public
I think that it must break too many legitimate things, so they don't want to push it out as a required patch. And there is some configuration. When you install it, you have to define what are the allowed networks and what are unallowed networks for a net BIOS functionality.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's just enough complexity that they don't want to push it out.
Yeah, for the average person, that's going to go.
Yeah.
That's going to send them down a hole.
Yeah, and so I think because it breaks too much, they make it optional. But no one knows about it, and no one knows about these attacks. As a penetration tester, when I do penetration testing, pretty excited about that because it allows me to capture passwords fairly easily.
Wow. Okay, so the significance of this is
that I can send you an email and get your password.
Yeah.
You don't even
and
know.
And very it. And 10 ways to do it without even you really knowing it.
Yeah, and there's lots of other ways. I mean, another interesting way is, suppose you're a Gmail user. I can send you a fake text claiming to be from Gmail going, hey, I've detected an attack on your network.
Right.
I'm going to send you a Google authentication code. And if you don't want your account locked out, you need to respond with that code to this message. I then go to Gmail, log in just using your email address. That's all I know. And I claim that I don't, my password and my two-factor is not working. And I ask it to send me a code to my phone, the pre-registered phone number, which it then does. That person then sends it in response to the fake text message. There's no way in SMS to tell that it isn't from Google.
Right.
They put the code in, I get it, reset the account, take control.
Oh my gosh.
So it's full of 10 different attacks that are fairly easy to send off. Or another one that I think a lot of people liked was, if I get your email address and password, which is not that hard. Again, I can send you an email you open. I get your...
Got the email.
I get your password hash. I crack it to your password.
Right.
I can then send a remote. I can, unbeknownst to you, with almost no way to block it, I can send you an. I can update your Outlook forms, which is like how it displays email, that view you see, so that when I send you the next email, it installs a backdoor that takes control of your computer. And then I can use your password hash to roam around your network, get more passwords, and take it down. And all I had was your email address and a password, which I can get by sending just an email. And phishing is quite successful. I could maybe trick you into sending me your email.
Yeah.
But take complete control of your environment, literally from an email address and password to complete control of your environment in minutes.
How prevalent is this? Is this a pretty common thing today, or is it
actually
pretty
rare? Interesting. So I don't. Most of the things I showed are not rare. The Outlook rogue form is rare.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I don't think that's been used. As far as I know, it's not been used in a public attack.
Right, right.
The other nine things are fairly common, have been used lots, but still, they're only 1-2% of the attacks.
Right.
So that's part of the reason why I chose them, is that they're interesting, they're more rare.
Yeah.
Regular phishing accounts are 70-90% of all attacks.
Yeah,
but like, you know, the thing that I tell people, like, I show how easy it is to own your environment, let's say an Outlook form or a rule, and they are used by spammers and phishers and hackers, and it's not detected by antivirus at all. But to find out, all you have to do is do a catalog of your network and find out who's got any rogue forms or any rules and check them. So it's really easy to check for. They are used by hackers. And so that's another thing. Or to tell the IT security team, if someone updates their Outlook form, make that be an alert, and somebody should just check and make sure that that's supposed to be being done.
Yeah, okay, that was my next question to you, is like, how do we protect ourselves? How does a credit union protect their members? How does a credit union protect itself and then educate their members to protect themselves?
I mean, it's like everything else. It's a combination of technical controls, like, you know, antivirus and firewalls and things to stop badness from getting to your end users, and training. Like, the idea that I can send you an email that and it looks like it has a hair or a piece of dust on it, and if they hit it, it sends their password hash. Most people aren't aware of that. But if you are aware of that, if you, like, get one of those emails and it looks like a hair or a piece of dust and they do it, you're like, I think I just got phished.
Yeah.
And you can let IT know so they can change your password, right?
Right.
So it's always a combination of technical controls and training. Neither one by themselves is going to solve it.
Right.
But together, you're going to get your best bang for the buck.
See, I just learned that, and now I'm going to be on the lookout for it.
That's right.
I never would have known it before.
Yeah.
So never in a million years. Hey, let's get you to tomorrow's presentation, quantum computing, breaking crypto.
Yes.
So give us a quick 411 on that.
Yeah, so I'm actually just finishing up a book for Wiley on it.
Oh, are you?
Okay. It's become a very popular topic. In the next couple of years, quantum computing is likely to break most traditional forms of public key crypto that we use today. Mostly, like TLS will be broken, Wi-Fi broken, cryptocurrencies broken.
Wow.
And it's always been, I've been following quantum computing for about 2 decades, and when people would say, well, when's this break? When's the quantum crypto break going to happen?
Yeah.
Everybody would say, next 10 years. Even Bruce Schneier, an acquaintance friend of mine once, when I said, hey, in the next 10 years, he said, Roger, he went by me, he was going on the stage after me, he goes, how long have you been saying 10 years? And I realized, I've been saying 10 years for 15 years. But
so is it like next year now?
I would say that I think we're going to get to where quantum computing surpasses traditional binary computing in the next year.
Oh, wow.
It's going to happen
okay.
6 to 12 months.
Okay.
To the point they have enough what's called qubits, quantum bits, to actually break big public keys. I think, I mean, it varies, no one knows, but if you're asking me, I think 2 or 3 years. And at that point, everything that's been encrypted using RSA, Diffie Hellman, TLS, even your traditional symmetric ciphers like AES, your hashes, if you're not using the bigger sizes, will be immediately broken. Today, there is a chance that there are many governments that have already broken them. If they're not, they're for sure sniffing the traffic, knowing that the day and a couple of years when they get it, they can go back and read your traffic.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a chance that you're at risk today. And so what the talk talks about it occurring, why it's going to occur, how it's going to occur, but more importantly, and the reason why anybody should attend it, is how to prepare. Like, why do I care, and how do I prepare? Because there's things you can do today. And then certainly, for sure, you need to start planning for what happens in a couple of years, right? We have another coming, what's called Y2K event. People think Y2K was a failure, because when Y2K, when the year 2000 came, most things didn't break.
Right, yeah, nothing really happened.
But the reality is, we actually had years to prepare, and a lot of us were scrambling in the last year. I mean, putting in long hours.
I remember that.
So it became a non-event. Well, this is another type of Y2K thing. If we just let it happen, we're going to get hurt.
Right.
But if we start to prepare and move our organization, something called crypto agility, which means when you have cryptography in your company, making sure that you can swap out the old broken stuff with the new stuff, crypto agile, will help your company move when it needs to move.
Oh my gosh. So if you're going into college now and you're looking for a major and you have job security, is like crypto engineering or something like that?
Well, there's lots of what's called post-quantum crypto or crypto-resistant stuff. Nobody's using it.
Okay.
You for the most part, can't even implement it outside of some special customized projects.
Yeah.
But I think your company does need to start, when you get with a new, you're buying new cryptography from a vendor, go, hey, what are you going to be doing about the quantum break, and is this quantum resistant? If your vendor's like, huh? Well, you know.
Bye-bye.
It reminds me of the SHA-1 to SHA-2 migration that happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
There was a lot of vendors that were clueless.
Right.
I'd go, hey, do you have SHA-2? And they're like, huh? Well, you're not the guy I want to be dealing with. I want to deal with a guy that's preparing his company and my products to be moved over, be crypto agile when the move happens. So I think this is going to be a bigger Y2K issue. It impacts more things. I mean, again, it breaks TLS, which is over half the internet. I think it's 87% of the internet uses TLS. It breaks it. And there are no TLSs that use quantum resistant crypto. They will. But you got to make sure you move to it when it's available, or make it as an option. So it needs to be in your planning stage. I think every company, credit union, should have 1 or 2 pages just talking about, okay, this is an issue. It's coming for sure.
Yeah.
We don't know when.
Yeah.
This is our plan for us to prepare for it and what to do when it finally happens, so that our company can transition more smoothly than, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
At what point do we just throw up our hands and go, you know what, just take my information.
Yeah,
I don't care anymore. I'm going to go live under a rock in the forest.
A lot of it's already
out
there anyways, right?
I know. So, I mean, it's almost getting to that point. It's like, I'm done with it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but
I've been doing this 32 years.
Yeah.
And people always go, hey, you think it's going to be better next year? I don't know.
No,
the past 32 years,
worse.
It just gets worse and worse. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure you must go, how much worse does it have to be for society in general going, we won't tolerate it anymore?
Yeah.
Right now, society's being quite tolerant.
Well, I think we're becoming numb to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you had the Home Depot and the Macy's and the Michaels and all those things.
You hear about a billion record compromise, you're like,
whatever.
That's the fourth one this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm still driving my car down the freeway, you know? It's okay.
Yeah.
So,
but at some point, society is getting more and more enmeshed with mission critical things, right?
Right.
These days, we can kill people, right? We can stop pacemakers. We can disrupt
cars.
EMS systems.
Yeah.
Ransomware is shutting down cities, hospitals, police departments. So there is this need for us to be more secure.
You've convinced me, that there's definitely a need to keep defending it big time. So yeah, definitely. But as a consumer, as just a regular, you're like, you just broke your hands after a while.
I've been doing this 32 years. I'm all about computer security. But a real emergency is a loved one in the ER. Everything else is just work.
Right.
This is just work.
Yeah.
I don't want to be hacked. I don't want ransomware, but it ain't my kid in the ER.
Right.
So I try to keep it in perspective.
That's a good perspective. All right, Roger. Well, thanks again for hanging out with us for a few minutes. I might attend this one tomorrow. I'd be really interested to see. I wish I would have known about your 10 ways to hack through email. So darn. So I'll come to the one tomorrow. That'd be fun to watch. Appreciate it. All right.
Thank you.
Roger Grinds, No B4. Well done, sir. Good job.
Thank you.